Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And you know what? This guest, wow, his projects that are going on, I probably would need three shows to cover everything. And that's a good thing to be doing all these awesome things. So I'm excited to welcome the program, American Idol Taylor Hicks. Taylor, thanks for calling, and how are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I tell you, Taylor, it's looking back to American Idol and how it's transformed your life. Kind of tell us that in like a short, winning that and how it's just transformed your music career and career in general.
Well, it's, you know, I look at it kind of as a 10-year overnight success story. I started at an early age performing and touring and then, you know, obviously winning American Idol, and I've always wanted to be in show business, and I've always performed, and it's something that I'm just very fortunate to have caught the proverbial break, and I've just tried to, you know, really work hard and try to create a lot of opportunities. Opportunity creates luck, and just very blessed to be able to, you know, say that I've been a decade in show business at this point.
Wow, a decade in. And when did you win American Idol, Taylor? What year was it?
06.
06. Oh, wow. It just seems like yesterday to me. I mean, as well recognized as you are. And then that just turned, changed everything, right? I mean, like, meaning like recognizability and everyone not being able to go anywhere with not people not knowing who you are, right?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, it happens. When you're on a show like that, especially during the time of, you know, that I was on American Idol, where, you know, it truly was rivaling baseball as America's pastime, so to speak. It's, you know, you go from, you know, playing small venues in the Southeast and then in 6 months touring Southeast Asia. So it's that kind of, you know, rocket ship mentality that you just have to just kind of hold on and work as hard as you can.
Okay, so let's talk about the tour. You have an upcoming tour. I'm sure you're excited to be back performing again, and tours are always fun being in front of a live audience, isn't it?
It is. It's something that I've done, been doing for a long time, and I enjoy the touring process. And this tour consists of full band shows, and then also it, you know, it consists of some of the acoustic intimate venues and atmosphere, so it's kind of the best of both worlds. And being able to do that and perform all over the country, it's truly what I love to do.
And where are you going to be touring? What cities are the best place to go to your website to find out, or how many city tour are you doing?
You can go to my website for tour dates, and obviously I'm on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and all of those different outlets have tour dates, and you can find, you know, I'm doing a pretty extensive tour of America, and that's something that I just enjoyed thoroughly doing.
And that's great, because as a performer, if you enjoy performing, you're going to give the audience something really special, because it's so important to be able to go up, show up every day from one city to the next and do your very best, right?
That's what you have to do. You take every show and try to treat it as your last. And that's something that, you know, my band loves to perform. I love to perform, and that's, I'm just very, you know, fortunate to be able to do that all across the country.
Absolutely, for sure. So definitely I'll check out the website for that. Then let's go to the next thing on that. What your project. So you're really branching out. I think what American Idol helps you do, Taylor, is say, you know, you learn the ins and outs from touring and going and doing media events and all the things once you won the American Idol that you saw, you know what, learn more and more about the entertainment business, didn't you? from that experience?
Yeah, you really have to just, you know, you can't just create, you know, music. For me, I think it's kind of a personality-driven business. I think you have to branch out as much as you can, like you said. I think you have to put yourself out there. Obviously, you know, for me, it was Broadway, and it was, you know, a show in Las Vegas for a while, and now a brand new project called State Plate, which is a food and travel show that's going to be airing in the fall. And that's something that you have to do. And I think you have to try a lot of different things, and you have to show your different sides of personality. And I think reinvention is the key.
Oh, I believe in reinventing yourself every day. I mean, from my life as a professional wrestler first, then to become a teacher, and then entrepreneur, and then getting back into the entertainment business throughout that process, you just never know where you're going. You think, oh, well, I'm doing this TV thing just to do this or that, and you never know what the next break is. My radio network started, Taylor, as an education show, just talking about teaching. And the nuances of that, it's still around, but I never thought I'd be interviewing such amazing people like yourself. So it's just, it's a really an awesome thing for sure. And putting yourself out there with food and travel, you must enjoy both of those things, right, Taylor, to be part of the show?
I really do. I co-own a barbecue chain in Birmingham, Alabama called Saws Barbecue, S-A-W-S. And obviously, you know, I always like to say, if you can't be a foodie and be from Alabama. If you're from Alabama, you're a foodie. It's just born into you because there's so much food, you know, down there, and it's just such a great place to live. And you know, obviously, I've done all kinds of traveling and performing and touring, and then this is just kind of the next step, so to speak, for me to get into hosting television. And that's something that I've always wanted to do. And I feel like, you know, culminating some of the entertainment and some of the travel and some of the food in this particular concept, such as State Plate that we're doing, this is it's just a great concept. You take a plate,
yes.
It's obviously plate off of the state license plate, but it's truly a plate of food that's completely indigenous to the state that we're at, which is, could be cheese curds in Wisconsin, deep dish pizza in Chicago, and we try to fill up a plate of food that's indigenous to each state. So we're going to go around to all the different states and really educate people on where the food comes from, farm to table, and what makes up such rich diversity in our culinary in our culinary arts in America. And that's something that I'm really excited about. It's not only from an entertainment standpoint, it's great, but it's also from an educational standpoint as well.
It definitely seems like it. And I like the idea that because you're an entertainer and you've traveled all over the world, you understand the nuances of different cities and what they have and little towns and what great food is out there. And traveling the road, it's just like you're doing it in a different way, but you're kind of experiencing what you saw on the road, right? After a show's over, okay, it's going to go right back to the hotel room, or we're going to get into a town. We're going to really try to experience that town. And this is what the show's going to bring to the plate, right?
It is. And this is what makes up America. And this is what the people really drive, the American people really drive, this show, the heartland, the people that make, really prideful things food that comes from each state. And I'm just very fortunate to be able to have a concept like State Plate that will be able to educate people in a big way about foods that really are, that really come from each state. And I'm excited about it.
Well, it seems like you definitely are. And I'm excited what network will it be tuning in on to tune in? And again, it's coming up.
It's the INSP network. It's such a great network to be a part of. And I couldn't be more excited about it. It's a network TV show, and we're right now we're in the process of filming it and shooting it and traveling, and it's going to be a great show. It really has an opportunity to become a big hit, and I'm excited about that because it really does, you know, highlight the people that really, you know, make up this country.
Definitely, absolutely. So definitely got to tune into that. And I think that the great situation is that we're missing it from a celebrity point of view, because you have, again, the experiences. And I'm sure when you were doing this, you probably remember towns that you were traveling to that said, hey, we got to stop back here, right? I'm sure that's the other cool part thing about it is you've been to a lot of these places.
Yeah, and revisiting them, and not only from a musical standpoint, but from also a culinary standpoint, food. And you know, I look at it kind of like there's kind of a Mike Rowe is a great example, Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe. I think that there's a Mike Rowe element in here where we do go to the farm and we do discuss where the origin of these foods really come from each state. And I think it's just, you know, a wonderful concept that's going to be embraced by everybody.
Do you like history, Taylor? Is that something that you like, looking at history and towns and stuff? Because that's what it seems like you're trying to spin the show in a lot of ways, is that you want to know the backstory of these restaurants and the town in general that you're traveling to.
Well, I do. I do love, obviously, being, you know, from Alabama and being, you know, made up of a great, there's just such a great American culture of food and people that, yeah, it's just, I'm really excited about that, you know, educating people and also revisiting the towns.
Wow. Another thing, this is the perfect time to get the American Idol winner on with Idol ending. The Idol winning highest in 10-year TV history, just ending and saying goodbye. And that's really a thing that you look back, especially because once you carry that baton, you really become friends with the other idols as well and people that are part of the touring and all that, right?
Yeah, you do become a part of it. You see a lot of people on the road. I see a lot of the winners on the road sometimes when we're crossing paths in each town. And the way that, you know, Fox and the way that American Idol, you know, presented their last season, I think it just embraced the whole show, and America embraced it as kind of an iconic show that to be a part of, and to be a part of that, and obviously to be on the show at the time that I was on it. It was just, it's something that I'll never forget. It's also something that I'll be forever indebted to.
I think it definitely seems like that for sure, Taylor. And it's just, it's something that it, a platform like that, the way it was done and the popularity of it, and how people, you, from a reality television show, that competition show, to make yourself the next big thing. It's tremendous, and there'll be nothing ever like this again, I believe, and to that magnitude.
Oh, I don't think that there will be either. I think it's one of a kind. And speaking of educational, if I can just,
absolutely,
you know, break in here and discuss, you know, Idol, you know, took a lot of, you know, it took the place of a lot of liberal arts programs that were cut across the country and are still,
yes,
being cut to a certain degree.
Yes.
So I think, you know, for Idol, for the entertainment value perspective, I think that, you know, Idol also was able to educate children about music and musicians and legendary entertainers, and I think that's what I enjoyed about the show the most, is that it really did, you know, present itself in kind of a liberal arts manner, so to speak, around the country for programs that might have been cut where kids could be educated from that. So I think Idol did take the place of that, and not to mention the fact that, you know, someone told me a couple of days ago that, you know, Idol really kind of taught people how to text message. I think,
yes,
you know, when you looked at it, you know, when texting was coming out, was first being presented to America, American Idol was the forerunner in, you know, teaching people how to do that through voting for their prospective contestants and ultimately winners.
And then from there, again, the journey, this whole Idol series finale and how you were part of that. That's just that, again, that was amazing as well, right? To say, to be part of the whole goodbye.
You know, it was. I think presented it. I think that the way that they keyed on the performers and winners and runners up and contestants from each season was just a really classy way of doing it. And that's something that that I, you know, am very grateful for the people of Fox and also Nigel Lithgow and Ken Warwick for giving me, you know, the opportunity to perform. And it truly is it's a blessing.
Definitely a blessing. And I'm sure that there were a lot of hugs and tears when this was over, especially the people who have been part of it.
There. Yeah, it was kind of an endearing moment, but it was something that I'll never forget.
All right. So, and another thing that coming into this whole, also you did something that you did a tribute to GI Seth for Memorial Day. Tell us about that.
Well, I just remember when we were on a bus tour, you know, I have a song called 19, and it's a patriotic number about a fallen soldier. And it's, you know, he actually came home from, you know, his respective call of duty and actually couldn't get to be able to catch the show. But he arrived right after we got done performing, and I just him and his mother were there. And I just said, well, let's get on the bus and do a little mini concert for him and his service. And that's something that I just, you know, I really, really take to heart about their kids that, you know, go over and serve our country. And they also serve here, first responders.
Yes.
You know, people in that, you know, field protect our freedom. And I couldn't live the American dream if that weren't the case.
And that's the thing that you really want to bring out in your music, is telling stories in that way, especially when you talk about our heroes. We can't forget our heroes that have fought for us, for our freedom, and they're the ones that are sacrificing each and every day so you and I can choose what we want to do in life, be able to be who we want to be. If it wasn't for our military, we would not be able to experience life in so many ways. We need to honor them for sure.
Every day.
That's a good one way and one word, every day, for sure, Taylor. What do you think you want to accomplish in the next 10 years? We talked about the first 10 years. What do you want to accomplish in the next 10 years?
Well, obviously touring, you know, keeping the live show and keeping the touring aspect of you know, up and running. And who knows, maybe a scripted role. I'm looking at some scripted roles on television and film. And, you know, obviously, I hope State Plate will be in its 10th season. How about that?
Hey, and then you have to come back next year to promote the next season, right?
Hey,
that's a goal, right?
Do that. Don't you worry. That's the goal.
Exactly.
We'll be talking
at the
same time.
That's what I want to do. And then and to go into more of the backstories of American Idol, what would you think is the most the greatest memory you have from the American Idol experience? Can you share that?
I think it's just touching lives. You know, being able to be on that show and being a winner, and then obviously being able to use it for the good and some of the charitable aspects that you're allowed to do. And, you know, the money that you raise for different charity organizations that you perform for, when you're in the throes of the show, you don't realize just what a difference you can make in people's lives by giving back. And then after being on that show and winning it, once you hop off that platform, you know, God creates opportunities where you can really be able to change, the lives, so to speak. And I think giving back and being charitable from that platform is probably my greatest memory of being able to do that.
And now, after that experience, to be able to work with some of the greatest artists ever, that's the other part of this. Is the idol didn't just bring the fact that you were a star, you went out and toured, you got to learn from the best, didn't you?
I did, as
entertainers.
And I tried to ask as many questions and learn from everybody as I could. This business that they call the business of show, it is a learning process every day. And if you don't listen to listen to people that have been in it that can educate you on, you know, how to move through and navigate the waters of entertainment, you know, you're losing. So I try to, you know, listen and learn as much as I can, because it is, it is ever changing from a social media aspect. You have to learn, and that's something that I try to do every day.
Could you imagine if you were part of when the social media blitz is now in Idol, meaning starting Idol, and how different it is with the live tweeting and everything to when you want it? It blows you away, right?
I think I think one of the social media people from the show said if I had a Twitter handle after I won American Idol, I probably would have had a quarter of a billion followers.
Oh my gosh!
Wow, it's pretty crazy to think about how it changes day to day.
Exactly, and understanding the nuances of it, and you performing. So that's great. You have some aspirations of acting as well, and you've had some experiences in that. As I was looking at this tremendous bio, for sure, Taylor, and I really appreciate you coming on, but you got to remember, put this in your calendar. Two things, put in your calendar. When you have your second season, when you're signed on for second season, you're coming on to promote the second season, and then also, if you're in Pittsburgh, we're gonna have to hang out if you do tour in Pittsburgh.
Well, you know, I come from the steel city of the South, Birmingham, Alabama. So I love Pittsburgh. I've got a lot of friends there, and it's got a place in my heart. Sure, I've been known to be a big Pirates fan at times. So,
and we got to be a Penguins fan, right? That was disappointing losing Game 5. There's still a shot. I wanted to see them clinch in Pittsburgh. I think they'll clinch in San Jose. So we'll see what happens for sure. All right. So best place to find information on you, Taylor, and all that. Are you touring Pittsburgh? I didn't get to check your tour list. Are you going to Pittsburgh?
It's getting added every day. So it's added, there's shows added. So I'll probably be coming to your town soon, and we'll definitely catch up for sure. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So best place, again, find information, your website, all that. Where can we go?
TaylorHicks.com, Twitter, Instagram, the whole nine yards.
Well, Taylor, thanks for taking the time and your busy schedule. Take care, man, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. And I want to really go right off the bat for my guest today. When I was a kid, I have always liked bigger actors, big guys. Let's kind of go into the days of Night Court and other types of things, because I right now, as my audience knows, is 6'10". So I've always liked big actors throughout my life, and I remember him from Parker Lewis Can't Lose, ER. I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity Abraham Ben-Ruby. Abraham, thanks for calling. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. I apologize for calling a little bit late. I was stuck in traffic,
Hey, I'm used to this. I do radio tours every day, Abraham. They call five
right
minutes
on.
Early. They call 5 minutes late. You know me. I'm cool. I just want to have a combo. And we can always have
Very
part
cool.
two if we don't have enough time, because I do have another interview from 3 all the way to 5 other celebs. So it's a crazy day for me.
Wow. Right on.
And
awesome.
If you looked at the list, you'd see that. But now, Abraham, tell us how you got started in acting. How did that happen?
I actually started, I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I started when I was about 8 years old in theater at the Indianapolis Civic Theater, taking classes and doing plays there. And then I wound up going to a high school called Browderville High School, and we had a good performing arts program there. And so after high school, there was a film from Hollywood that came to shoot in Indianapolis, and I wound up getting a small part in that. And the people involved in that encouraged me to come out to Hollywood and introduce me to my still current agents, and that's how I got started.
Wow. Now, Abraham, were you as big as you are today when you were a kid?
Yeah, I've been 6'7" since I was 13 years old, basically.
Okay. Yeah, I'm
massive.
Yeah, but I was, and I was a former professional wrestler, Abraham. So I didn't make it to the big time, but I was in minor leagues and ran into a lot of the big guys. And I was always a basketball player, so I wasn't big like you were at certain times. But then got really big for wrestling, and then I'm about 280 right now. But you know, that's my old days when I'm pro wrestler. I was 310. Pretty stacked, but you know, the whole thing. So I think that acting, for actors out there that are your height or my height, I'm not an actor,
yeah,
but I'd love to be. It's very hard to find these people, right? That can act and have that size, right?
There's a handful. There's a good 20 or 30 dudes that still see at auditions and or on screen. But it's definitely, there's a lot less competition than if you were a 5'5" handsome guy.
Right. So was your big break Parker Lewis Can't Lose, Abraham,
Yeah, Parker Lewis Can't Lose. I had been in Hollywood about 6 months when that came around, and that was like going to college for me. I basically learned how to be an actor in front of the camera as opposed to being on stage doing that show. And we were lucky because it was sort of the nascent days of the Fox Network when they would allow anything to go, basically. And so our directors got to play around with lenses and camera setups, and the
right.
show lent itself to that in its sort of cartoonish nature.
Exactly. And your character on Parker Lewis Can't Lose, I remember it, but for other people, what was the character?
So I played Larry Kubiak, affectionately known as the Kube, who was basically Parker Lewis's nemesis, the high school bully, who he then befriended through a series of acts of kindness and strangeness. So the gentle giant.
Is that a role that you like playing, Abraham?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I loved playing Coop. It was super fun. And, you know, I was 20 years old and new to all of it. And there was a lot of extracurricular activity around that show. We all hung out and had fun. And so that was a great experience for me.
And what would you say, Abraham, that were you ever approached to be like a professional wrestler at the size you had when you were acting? Did anyone come to you and say, you should be a pro wrestler?
Nobody ever asked me to be a pro wrestler. There were a couple of films. There was like a sumo film, which I'm clearly not a sumo wrestler. But there were a couple opportunities like that on film, but never in the actual pro wrestling circuits.
What did you learn from Parker Lewis? Because again, like we're going to kind of go into your older stuff, and then I want to have part two because I was trying to schedule at least talk to you for 30 minutes. So I'll get my assistant to set up the part two. But yeah,
sure.
That's no problem.
What did I learn from Parker Lewis? I learned, like I said, you know, how to act in front of the camera and what different lenses gave different looks and, you know, how to not blow out the microphone and just to act on film, because we were still shooting on film back then, as opposed to on stage. And there is a big difference, actually, because on stage you get the immediate feedback of the energy of the audience. And on film, it's sort of like, was that okay? Did that work? And hopefully the crew gives you the thumbs up.
What do you think made Parker Lewis so special? Because I loved the show. It was one of my favorite shows when it was out. What do you think it made so special?
Yeah, I loved watching Parker Lewis, too. I think I would have watched that even if I hadn't been a part of it. What made it so special was there was this weird, like, freedom in the creative process. They basically got to write whatever they wanted and make it happen. The directors were tasked with making these crazy imaginings of the writers happen, regardless of how they did it. They weren't sort of given any guidelines or rules. It was a lot of play and a lot of experimentation. And I think people really enjoyed working on it. And when the audience sees a project that the creators are enjoying, that joy comes through. And I think that's what made it a really special program.
Absolutely. And I think that anytime we talk about high school, it was the perfect timing to continue what the 80s brought and the early 90s brought in high school shows, right? That was just like,
exactly.
Everyone loved it because we all remember growing up in high school at one point in time.
Yeah, and I think it served a fantasy. You know, we all had the fantasy of being like the coolest kid in school and having the secret headquarters and being able to outwit the authority figures like the principal or the principal sneak. And I think that was a big part of it, was you get to watch your fantasies fulfilled.
And I think that everyone wanted to be Parker Lewis, didn't they? In a certain way.
Except for maybe the shirts.
Yeah. Everyone wanted to be able to get away with things, go ahead and do whatever they wanted and never lose in his intelligence and his way of getting around things.
Yeah, exactly right. He used his wits to solve problems as opposed to any kind of influence or strength or anything like that.
Absolutely, for sure. Kubiak, that's it. Your career's over, Abraham. Meaning you're a big guy. You know, the people think this, okay? And then you get cast in this drama called ER. Wow. That's the wow factor in this. This is why we have to have maybe three parts with how amazing you are. But ER, I mean, to go from a show that did well, but, you know, didn't last forever, to probably one of the greatest dramas ever. How did that story happen that you got in that, especially when you're so pinned into this high school kind of guy and you're so big, you know?
Yeah, there's a couple year gap in there. I think ER pilot we shot in 94. And the way that came about was I had auditioned for China Beach a couple of times, which was another show that John Wells, the executive producer of ER, had run. And his casting director, John Levy. And so they remembered me. I never got the parts on China Beach, but that was okay. That's the nature of the business. And when it came time to cast the 2-hour movie pilot of ER, he had something like 280 roles to fill or something like that. And so a lot of those parts were offered to people that they were already fond of, to actors that they already had seen do good work in their audition room. And so I was lucky enough to be included on that list. And the great thing about that was Jerry, the character I played, was not necessarily required to be a big guy. So that was what was unique about that show for me, was it was a role that could have been played by any actor whatsoever. And it just so happened to be me. And so that was a real blessing.
Exactly. And it really expanded your acting, right? Playing it with a cast like that in ER. Wow.
Oh, yeah. And the writing was exceptional. I mean, that's the thing. As an actor, you really want the writing to guide you in your performance. And ER is an example of some really fine television writing.
Fantastic television writing. And how much did you learn from that experience? A lot with the people you worked with.
I learned so much from working on ER, it's hard to sort of encapsulate, but I think the main takeaway was watching those other actors become huge stars and remain humble and cool and generous. And, you know, I mean, George Clooney, in the time that he was there, became one of the biggest stars on the planet. And he was always super cool, super intelligent. He never took advantage of his celebrity, if you will, in a negative way. But he definitely took advantage of it in all the positive ways. And I totally commend and respect and admire him and all the cast of ER for that.
Exactly. And the list goes on and on with different people, from Anthony Edwards to Noah Wyle. I mean, just to the, just the cast. And really, I think you learn from such talented people how to play a role where you were probably thinking you'd be typecasted forever as the big guy, right? So that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, that was the expectation for sure. I mean, most big guys on TV are either eating something or playing sports or being the bully or threatening. And on ER, I got to be like sardonic and funny and smart and clever and stupid at the same time. And there was a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, it wasn't just the regular cast of ER, but we had, I mean, I stood next to and acted with legends, Alan Alda, Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
I mean, we had Rosemary Clooney. We had even Buzz Aldrin was there once. It's like, it was pretty crazy,
wow,
that experience. Yeah.
And how many years were you on ER for?
So ER ran 15 years. They did 330 episodes, and I did about 155 over the course of those years. There were a couple other projects in the middle that I did where I wasn't on ER for a season or two. But I was in, I have a few episodes in all but like three seasons.
Wow, that's unbelievable. And will there ever be a show like ER? I just finished interviewing Taylor Hicks, American Idol. I said, there'll never be a show like American Idol. You think there'll ever be a show again like ER?
I don't know that any show will ever have
talent,
the longevity,
yeah,
of ER.
Yeah.
It's a different audience now. It's a different time. You know, people are more inclined to, you know, watch 15 episodes in a row, the whole story. And I think there's value in that, actually. I think even for a show that's as well written as ER, 15 years, you start recycling stories. Whereas if you know that there's a finite end to your show, then you've got one sort of really juicy story to tell and maybe don't have to repeat yourself.
Wow. Okay. So what's new with Abraham right now, what you're promoting, and let us know the news projects. And we're going to go with part two soon. So I'll put part one,
sure,
on the in the bio, because I have a lot more questions for sure. And you're very, very articulate. And I had a feeling you would be for sure. And like I said, I'm a big fan of big actors. So we talked,
yeah,
about Richard Bull from Night Court. I have,
yeah,
to come up with a list for next time to talk about, because they are like my idols, because if I ever was an actor, I'd be like these guys. So, again, what's,
yeah,
going on with you, Abraham?
Yeah, so what's going on right now? Let's see. Beginning of the year, I had a film come out that I think people should see called The Finest Hours. It's a true story about a Coast Guard rescue that happened in 1952, where four brave Coast Guards rescued 32 drowning sailors from this oil tanker that had been shipwrecked off the coast of Cape Cod, Boston. And so that's out on video now. I have a few episodes of a show on Cinemax called Outcast, which is from the creator of The Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman. And that's a really cool and spooky supernatural show about a demonic possession of a small town. And then I've got, sometime next year, a really, really fantastic film called Heart Baby, which is also a true story about a prisoner who was such a good boxer that they invited him to be on the 1984 Olympic boxing team in exchange for his freedom. And he chose not to take that offer. And it's really crazy why. It's a big twist, and it's one of the greatest scripts I've ever read. It's one of the coolest projects I've ever worked on, and I really have high hopes for that. Should be out sometime next year, maybe after a run in the festivals.
All right, and so, and Abraham, best place to follow you really quick, 5 seconds.
I'm sorry, one more time?
Where can we follow you? Where can we find information on you, Abraham?
Oh,
where can we go?
I guess I just switched my website and it's on Wix, so you can probably just search for me and find that.
Google you and find that. That's no problem, Abraham. And social media wise, Facebook,
social media,
all
I'm
that.
On Twitter. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook, I think there's a fan page that I don't run.
Okay.
But definitely on Instagram, that seemed my favorite one.
All right, thanks, Abraham. Take care, man, and we'll have part two very soon. I'll have my
I appreciate it.
My assistant reach out. Take care, man. See ya. Okay.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye.
See ya. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, @TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. I'm excited to welcome the program. I'm sure he's a really excited celebrity, Zachary S. Williams, and he's going to join Oprah's own drama, Greenleaf. Zachary, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on the air.
Oh, absolutely, Zachary. I mean, it must blow you away to get to have this project, to work with someone as amazing as Oprah, right?
It really is, yes.
So tell us specifically how you started in acting, Zachary.
Well, it all started when I was about 8 years old in the third grade. I went to this summer camp called Kids College. And basically, it was created to give kids the opportunity to experience college. And you were able to pick your summer activities that you wanted to participate in. And all mine were theater. And my first role, I should say, was a singing seaweed in Finding Nemo. And that was enough for me to want to continue on with acting.
So, Finding Nemo, and now that's kind of dating back a lot, right, Zachary, now with the new Nemo movie out?
Yes.
So, there you go, another good promotion. So, I'm sure Disney will be calling you soon, right?
Hopefully.
All right, so let's kind of delve into, so then, when did you decide you're going to do this professionally? How much longer did you go through till you finally did that?
I would say it was probably the next year. I got an agent, and I was filming my first commercial.
Wow, that's got to be amazing. What was the commercial that you filmed at 8?
It was for at the time Universal was opening up the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and so it was a commercial to kind of promote and build hype for the new section of the park they were opening up.
Oh, wow. How many people auditioned so that people can understand how difficult even it is to book a commercial? How many people auditioned for that role?
You know, being in Central Florida, there are so many theme parks here. So I think, you know, I think it was quite a bit of people they looked at, you know. There's constantly work, so they're constantly having auditions, and that's just what attracts people to this area because of the theme park commercials, the print.
Absolutely. So once you did that, you said, "Hey, this is gonna be easy, right? What are you thinking at 8 years old, booking your commercial, and what did you think?" And said, "Well, where am I going from here, right?"
Yeah, I was just interested by the whole experience, and I just wanted to keep doing it, you know. I didn't really think of, you know, where I could end up at 10 years from now at the time. I just kind of went with the flow and continued to do it.
Definitely. And let's continue with the story. After you did that commercial, was it easy to land another role after that?
I don't know how long it was between my first two commercials, but I know I kind of got into the groove of things. I kind of got a better understanding of how castings worked and all that.
Gotcha. And then had the agent and the whole different thing. So commercial work, what was your first, like, role that was not commercial-wise?
Well, in theater or like on television?
Anything. Just tell us your career. We're definitely interested in learning that.
Okay. Well, once I got into middle school, I started doing a community theater at Bay Street. I did Cabaret Follies and Annie. And then I moved to Orlando Rep. And I did The Outrageous Adventures of Robinson Crusoe. And once I got to high school, you know, I continued doing our shows throughout the year. And right before my freshman year, I booked Raise Rookies, which is a TV show for kids that engages them into everything about the Tampa Bay Rays baseball team. So it's a
Interesting. Yeah.
It was a cool experience. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll jump to the Rays rookies thing, but I wanted to jump a little bit into the theater acting. I mean, it's a lot of work. You know, acting on stage because you don't get two takes, right? You're in front of a live audience, and you got to make sure that everything is set up. How did you kind of develop yourself as an actor in that way? Take a lot of acting classes to have these experiences?
Yes, I actually am in a scene study 2 class every Thursday night. But theater is, it's a way for me to really work on my craft because the rehearsal time leading up to the show is very long and intense. And I think it's a very important background for me to have.
Mm-hmm. Do you aspire, Zachary, ever to go on Broadway? Seems like you love theater.
Yes. I love theater. My dream is to be on Broadway and do TV and film at the same time. That's a goal of mine.
Hey, so, you know, have a hit show like this happens, and then you never know and where it goes from here, right? You get this opportunity,
right.
And we'll talk about who you've worked with for sure. And then you never know. And then you start to decide, hey, I'm going to do some producing. You have all these aspirations at your age, which is fantastic. And then you never know. And then, so you're hoping, hey, you make success in the film and TV game and say, hey, we want you, Zachary, right? We want you to be on Broadway in a certain show. And we want you. So you don't have to go through the process. You're doing it all and still doing Broadway, right? That's a great aspiration for sure.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. So let's go to Rays rookies. So how did you get, tell us how this happened? Because again, it seems like you were really more focusing on theater. How did this opportunity come about?
Well, my agent had sent out an email. It was very generic. They said that they were looking for hosts for a new TV show for a local baseball team. And like I said, it was very generic, so I decided not to go for it initially. But then I kept seeing, they kept looking, so I was finally like, okay. We told my agent that I was interested. And then I submitted a tape, and I found out, I think the next day, the producers wanted to have a call back with me over Skype.
That's fabulous.
And then
that's
after,
great.
I know it was, I think everything happens for a reason, you know. I kind of was hesitant about going for this, and then when I finally do go for it, it became an amazing opportunity for me.
And were you a baseball fan to begin with once you got this gig?
Honestly, no. But as soon as the first day of filming, when we got to take a tour of the stadium, I was like, this place is so cool. We got so many exclusive knowledge that no one really gets to experience, and I just thought that was amazing.
Well, it definitely does. And have you, in doing the show, have you gotten to meet, I'm sure you gotten to meet players from the Rays, but have you gotten to meet other players from other teams as well?
No, we've been mainly focused on the Rays. We've interviewed every single player this past February.
That's cool. Have you gone to the games where you get to at least get in the clubhouse and stuff like that from the experience of doing the show?
Yes. Mm-hmm. From actually watching the show, we, you know, because the goal of the show is to get the youth fans involved. And so in the show, you definitely see some clips inside the actual clubhouse. Kids will be able to kind of get an all-exclusive experience inside there without actually being in the stadium, which I think is really cool.
All right, so I guess this experience, that helped your agent say, okay, let's go after something. And how did tell us the story of how you found out about this possibility of being on Oprah's network for Greenlee. How did that happen?
I received another email you know, it was for an audition for Greenleaf, and I knew it was going to be airing on OWN, but before I auditioned, I didn't know that Miss Oprah Winfrey would actually be starring in the show herself. It wasn't actually until about half an hour after I found out that I booked it that I made the connection that Oprah was playing Mavis. So that was pretty crazy.
So once you book it, when you were auditioning, they did not tell you that, right? They did not tell you, by the way, you couldn't.
No.
That Oprah, no.
Mm-mm. Because my character, William, in the audition scene, the only other person he was, you know, having a conversation with was Mavis. And I did not know that that would be played by Miss Winfrey.
Wow. And so, and then you show up, you get the part, and you find out who your cast is, and you're, like, absolutely blown away, aren't you?
Oh, yes. It's such an amazing cast.
There's some. Who else is in the cast? And we'll go in a little bit of the. And then we'll go into the show more, because I did receive a press release about the show, and another one of the guests might be coming on. I don't know for sure. I'll have to update you through social media if that happens. I don't know. It's if the business of how you work, where you get an email. Well, I get an email if it ends up happening as well. That's how it works for sure. But so tell me who else is in the cast.
Okay, well, we have Merle Dandridge. She plays the role of Grace Greenleaf, which is who the story centers around. Lynn Whitfield plays Lady May Greenleaf. Keith David, Lamon Rucker, Desiree Ross, Lovey Simone, Kim Hawthorne, Ty White, just all around an amazing
cast.
The
name of you, yeah. Exactly. And you as I wouldn't call yourself a rookie actor, kind of playing the whole Ray's rookies, but rookie in front of the television screen for sure. You know, you shot commercials, you've done community theater. I'm sure the experience of being a co-host helps. And I wonder if Oprah liked that. Again, you know, talk show host to talk show host, right?
Right, right. There's something in common there.
That's a great commonality. Did you ever have that little conversation? Hey, I do the little Ray's rookies thing to her.
You know, actually we did not. We did not have that conversation.
I'm sure she knew about it, especially how unbelievable she is running the network and being involved in so many different things. I'm sure she knew.
Yeah.
All right, tell us the storyline of Greenleaf and your character.
Okay, well, Mavis owns this bar, and my character, William, comes from a dysfunctional home. There's a lot of drugs and violence, and at this bar, he's able to kind of get away from all of that negativity, and it's kind of become sort of a safe space for him. And Mavis, who owns the bar, she lets him basically stay there as long as he wants. He helps her out by setting up these jazz and blues artists and sometimes, you know, poetry and music. For him is definitely another way for him to escape all that goes on at home.
Interesting, for sure.
That place. For him to get away where there's a bunch of music every night of the week, I think that's very sentimental for him, for William.
And this takes place, the Greenleaf family, in a Memphis mega church is the big storyline of that. And so that's controversial in itself, wouldn't you say so? Especially when a show like that with a church and stuff, yeah.
Right. You know, it's such an intriguing storyline that I think people are really going to enjoy it. There's a lot of drama, a lot of mysteries and thrillers happening in it, and I'm excited.
I'm sure you're excited when it debuts, right? And then you're going to tune into the own network and say, oh my gosh, Oprah Winfrey's network. And you're like, oh, there's me, and holy cow. And that's the great thing is, again, Oprah Winfrey Network is really being available every network now. Every cable provider is picking it up now. So, wow. What a change when you're auditioning next, right?
Right.
With this experience. And so this drama, how long does this last, this drama? Is this a weekly show, right?
Yes. And we have a two-night premiere on Tuesday, June 21st and June 22nd. And then the rest of the season will air on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on OWN.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And I'm sure you're really excited about that for sure, and how your character will grow.
Oh,
and I'm sure you've been updated by your team now, especially possibly of getting involved in more and more social media right now, because people are going to be buzzing about the show and stuff, right?
Of course. Yes.
Where's like places we can follow you and stuff, Zachary?
Okay. On Instagram and Facebook, you can follow me and stay in tune at Zachary S. Williams, and on Twitter at Zach S. Williams.
Awesome. Well, we'll be treating this out throughout syndication when it goes out for sure, and really doing a great job of promoting the show and all those things. And then Ray's Rookies, you're still co-hosting that as well, and people can tune in the Tampa area, because we are on radio in Tampa as well, internet and terrestrial.
Yeah.
People can tune in.
Yes,
what station are you on for Tampa's show, Ray's Rookies? Where can people find that?
Fox and Sun Sports.
Awesome. Well, all right. So can you give us a prediction about the Rays this year? What are you thinking?
Oh, Rays is going to take it all. Take it all.
All right. Well, fantastic. You're a great guy, and I'm wishing you all the best in this opportunity for sure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And take it to the next level again. So what time should people tune in to Greenleaf on O's Network? What time?
10 p.m. 10 p.m. on Wednesdays.
Wednesdays, and the debut is Wednesday, right? That's when it launches, correct?
Well, the first episode
actually
launches the 21st on Tuesday, and then the second episode Wednesday the 22nd, and then every Wednesday at 10.
Awesome. Well, I'll be tuning in rooting on your character, and best of luck to you, and thanks for stopping by, and best of luck in your career, man.
Well, thank you.
All right, take care, Zachary. See ya. Okay, bye-bye.
You too.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.